She's got a hand up.
Okay.
But they got me.
Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I move to approve the agenda with the change of D and E being removed. Action items 9 D and E. All second. Any discussion? Okay, roll
what
call.
Was that again, Sean? What did you move to approve? What did you need to change?
So D and E are not needed. They were
okay.
On the action items.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Okay, roll call, Sean. Hi. Wilma.
Hi.
Stacy.
Hi.
Hi.
And Randy.
Hi.
Skip it.
Yep.
And then item B, election of officers. Does anybody have a nomination?
I nominate Sean Deasy as president again.
Can you do a slate? Does anybody mind if he does a slate?
We can do a slate.
What's a slate? No.
Do them all
at the same time.
Oh, okay.
I'll be the clerk again.
Is
that what we are?
Yes, I can.
Is that your motion?
That's the motion.
Is there a second?
I know better than argue, Wilma.
So we're staying the same? You went blank for a minute.
No, it is the nomination is for Sean Deasy as president, Jason Ingram as vice president, and Stacy Kirkland as...
Okay.
So now you're looking for a second on that.
Okay, any discussion?
Can you tell me that one more time? It's all breaking up. I didn't hear you said Stacy Kirkland is nominated for
clerk.
Clerk. Okay.
Sean, hi. Wilma?
Hi.
Stacy?
Hi.
Randy?
Hi.
Agenda. I'll make a motion to approve this. Sorry. Any discussion on any of these items? Okay, roll
call. Can you tell me? I lost it again on the motions. It's like you guys are going really quiet where we can't hear you.
Katie, I don't mind repeating stuff, but I'm writing it down too, so I can share or whatever you miss, okay?
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Send us a message.
Yeah.
The motion, I mean, second.
Roll call, Sean, hi. Wilma?
Hi.
Stacy?
Hi.
Hi.
And Randy?
Hi.
Public comments. Anyone have anything to say that's not on the agenda? Okay, big names. We're moving on. Board member reports. Does any board member have a report? That's easy. Executive director.
I don't have anything to add to my written report other than we became aware we've had some fraud recently. Bank fraud.
On our accounts?
Oh, well, yes,
outside
on our accounts. So outside, okay. It's all outside. One we had in November that came up. We sent checks to a vendor and someone stole the checks out of their mailbox. And one of them, they changed the payee name. They actually whited out the name of the payee and changed that. And the second one, they didn't do that, but they signed for the vendor and it wasn't the vendor's. You know, the vendor has a stamp when they deposit a check, and this was just somebody's John Hancock. But he went to Plumas Bank to deposit it. So one of the banks in the process there actually called us. You got a call from that bank.
Was it a local post office?
It was in Susanville.
Susanville.
Mm-hmm. It appears that they are stealing their mail out of their mailbox on the street.
Oh, like a rural rat? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they tried to deposit it at Plumas Bank in Susanville.
They did. It went through the banks. It cleared everything.
And the person's name that stole it.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. So that person's in jail, right?
Oh,
you know, we fill out the paperwork with the bank, and the bank then carries it on. Right. And then, and Brian's here with us, we were looking at that accounts for the check register for November that's contained in this packet. And Elle noticed a couple of transactions that she didn't recognize. But what we learned is this process is the bank statement is being reconciled by EdTech. They found things on that checking statement that didn't belong to us. There was no invoice for, you know, we hadn't put it as a credit card thing. It was completely separate from anything we did. And they put it in a holding account so they can figure out where it goes, how it should be coded, whatever. And we determined that those are fraudulent items. They have nothing to do with us. And then Elle looked at December and January, and there's still more. So in total, there was about 25 items that have gone through our checking account.
For a total of?
I don't have a total for you. Did you do it?
I didn't do a total.
I'm going to say it's probably around 10 grand.
Wow. And our banks don't cover this, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we
but
got
it's different vendors. It's not just one. Like, yeah, it's.
There were payments to Capital One. There. It was just all bizarre things. So someone had gotten away to do this. So the bank asked us to take all of those items, put it in writing, send it. They have a special email that we use for communicating with the bank. And I expect to hear from them tomorrow with a big fat packet that we got to fill out to document more.
So whoever did this, they got our account number, routing number off the bottom of a check and just opened up all kinds of can of worms from a piece of mail they stole, basically.
I don't know. Brian, do you have any thoughts on how somebody would be able to make those transactions?
Honestly, I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, we don't even have, so EdTech, like we actually only have read-only access, like established, so there's no like ability for any transfers to take place. We even have a process with the bank that kind of works on like catching fraud. So we like upload our transactions and then they like only pay those transactions and they actually notify like Elle if there's any exceptions to that process usually. So we're actually kind of wondering, we were also wondering like how it got through that process because the bank, that's the bank's process as well. So I'm not actually sure. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So we're not 100% sure how that is. I think the bank will have to begin their process of figuring out what happened.
Right.
I'm expecting they may cancel that checking account number and have to reestablish because we don't know. Right?
Absolutely.
Who is your bank? Is it Plumas?
It's U.S. Bank.
Oh, it's U.S. Bank. Okay.
So this is separate from what's in your notes about the wrong school coding and all of that, the correct place.
This latter part we just sent out today. I noticed it today. So once we started looking into it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a name attached to this Plumas Bank account where their money's got deposited?
So that we don't know. Like, so there's an account number and it looked like it went to an ATM, but they're not going to share that information with us. We just have to fill out the paperwork for the fraud department and then they take it from there.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah,
we're curious too.
Yeah.
Very much like, so. Who do we know? on both instances. And the address, the one that was the check that was altered where somebody whited out the name of the vendor and put another name and address, was in Sacramento.
How does a bank take the check that's
been whited out? Yeah.
Right. Well, and so that's how we found out, is because the bank, it did go through, and it was a U.S. bank, it did go through all the processing, but then when it gets to one point, then it got shot over to the fraud department, and that's who involved.
So they actually were holding the funds. They were not clearing that check all the way. So that one, you know, our U.S. bank needed to call back those funds, and they were going to make good on that. So that part was coming together. But, you know, it was a shocker for us to see that kind of fraud happening. Mm-hmm. And part of what we do, right, with EdTech in the process, that helps keep it that, you know, we're generating what checks should be paid. They're physically paying them, and then they're reconciling the account. So there's several hands in it so that it's not all in one person's, you know, control. I approve all the checks that get written. So there's a number of us involved in the different processes. So shocking. But wanted to let you know, because that was not in my notes since this was new.
A whited out check.
I know.
Anything else, Sherry?
What is going on with all the coding that Elle is having to redo every month, and what? Where are we at with that as of today? Are we looking at going back to the other company? Are we staying where we're at? Or what? Where are you at with that?
So, you know, Brian knows I'm pretty not happy right now with how things have gone. There's a lot still unclosed, unrectified. So we're still in the process. You know, one day something gets cleaned up and then another thing has popped up. So we are, you know, Brian's well aware of all the things, and he's trying to get us answers from other internal staff. I continue to talk to their CEO to express our concerns. You know, it's a company with a really good reputation. Everyone I spoke to was really quite happy. You know, Kathy sitting here, her school, her previous school used EdTech. So where am I? You know, I'm not going to be anywhere until you all get to have an opportunity to weigh in. You know, there's several steps in making any change. So I'm talking to both companies, seeing where we are, Stacy, and I would imagine within the next, by February, I hope to, if we want to make any kind of change, that I have some information to present.
Okay. And is the, because we've had this breach that has went on and it's kind of been under, you know, they've been reconciling, is that something that we're going to bring back in-house for Elle to do? Not that she needs one more thing to do, but like, so that we can catch these things at a, or is that even our job as a school to catch these things?
What's your thinking now? Well, I do review quite a few things, but I'm going to be honest with you. This is something that I never had to do with DMS. So it wasn't in my radar to be checking all of the stuff inside and out. But after catching that, because I noticed right away something's not right. So I think moving forward, absolutely, when those bank statements for sure come in, I'm going to be going through them with a fine-tooth comb to make sure everything's looking correctly.
So I don't think anything changes with EdTech's process. They're still going to do all their pieces. I think Elle's just going to step up now, knowing that she also has to fine tooth comb it the minute it gets here.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. But we're hoping that we can move away from that. Yes. I mean, we're fine tooth combing it now because we know there's been some issues, but I don't really think we should pay for their service and still have to do part of their work that we never had a problem with another company. Because I had the same questions that Stacy has when I read your, and I'm like, you know, how long are we going to give them to get this straightened out? Are they giving us any kind of compensation for us doing more of their work than they're doing?
So that was one of the conversations I had with their CEO.
Yeah.
Was compensation. I actually asked for a couple months compensation. And he offered like a $5,000 compensation. We paid $14,000 a month for their services.
And $5,000?
So, you know, he had his formula. He came up with that to share. I still, you know, from our perspective, us, as the main client itself,
we're totally missing that. When you turn away, we don't hear you. Sorry.
You hear me better when I'm facing this way?
Yes.
Thank you. I didn't realize. Perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
So
that was all garbled.
What's the last thing you heard? Do you remember?
We were talking about that they had offered $5,000 and then you were saying something.
Right. So they offered $5,000. I've not accepted that.
Okay.
Because I think that's not acceptable. Considering the amount of time Elle and her team have put in. And for us, he explained his way of calculating that $5,000 that was really based from his side. Based on what was wrong, a percentage of overall services, but I don't think that considers our time. So we did not come to an agreement on that. And now we've had more go wrong, you know, recently. So that's definitely not the right number.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
But more than that, it's about all the procedures. Like there's things that are still open, that are still being worked on. I can't believe we have this many processes that are not just nice and clean and smooth going. So we're looking at that.
Okay, finance report.
So I did explain to Brian that we only want reports during the interims and the budgets, but I thought in light of he has some info to share and just, so he's not going to go through the whole finance report unless you have questions for him.
Okay,
hey, Brian, now that we've set you up and made you real comfy.
Oh, I'm okay. It's all right. Like Sherry said, I don't have any, we don't have updates on like the forecast or like anything related specifically to the school at this time, but the governor did release the January proposal very recently. So I just wanted to give a quick highlight of what those changes might be for next year. So originally the LAO, basically the projection was a $68 billion shortfall in California's budget about a month ago. However, that has changed to an estimate of about $38 billion. So it went from terrible to still probably not great, but better than what we were forecasting before. So there are cuts to a lot of other programs in the state, but they're actually not cutting education, which is awesome. The prior cost of living adjustment, so that's just the increase to several funding sources that we received, was about 3.94%. This was before we knew about the deficit. Now in the January proposal, the governor is suggesting a 0.76% increase rather than that 3.9. So it is a reduction of the increase by a little over 3%. So that's not great news, but it is good that we're not seeing cuts. And there's a couple other like program changes, but we'll just have to see like kind of what the legislature thinks of that and how the negotiations go. The other positive thing is they're not what something I thought that might come is deferrals, but they've in this proposal there's there's no language supporting bringing back deferrals, which is basically just where they promise they let you earn the funding, but they pay you the cash a year later, which is not very good for cash flow. So that's great. I mean, it's overall not great news. This will be the lowest COLA in several years. So not great news, but I would say it's like a little more positive than what I was thinking it would be when we were hearing about the $68 billion shortfall about a month ago. So yeah, but that's all I have to share.
I want to see if there are any questions that you want to pose to Brian.
That proposal that goes to the legislative body, correct?
Yeah, the January proposal is just what the governor wants, and then the legislature negotiates with the governor, and then the May revise comes out in May, obviously, and that is a little bit more of a compromise usually. So we'll kind of see what happens there. The last several years, the legislature's been kinder to education, so we've gotten like. A couple of years ago, the governor proposed a reduction in LCFF instead of a COLA, or what they call a negative COLA. And then the legislature was like, no, we're not going to do that. We don't really want to do that. And they negotiated it, and it came out as like a 0%. It was flat. But it's typically the last several years, the legislatures wanted more funding for education despite economic challenges. So we'll see if that trend continues. I hope it does. But we'll know more in May. Of course, we'll be updating like in our meetings, our projection and planning for, you know, different scenarios, including the 0.76%, maybe even a lower percentage, just to make sure that we have a little bit of wiggle room. But hopefully, yeah, optimistically, it could be slightly higher than that, but we'll just have to wait and find out.
Any other questions for Brian? Thank you, Brian. Program reports have been submitted in writing, so we're going to go to item 8A, construction update. Nick's in there somewhere.
Nick's there. Nick?
You might have his Hawaiian shirt on.
Yep, I am here. All right, let me pull up my notes here real quick. So for Doyle, we had a bit of a delay with our building erection. The building's been delivered. It's on site, but... the contractor is struggling with their erection contractor. Their original erection contractor is basically backed out of doing the project. So it's not necessarily our problem, except for that it affects the schedule. So in that effect, it is. And so they're scrambling to try to find another contractor. They've got a few proposals. They're trying to get some of the folks to sharpen their pencils a bit on what their cost is, but it looks like the goal is to try to have something finalized maybe as soon as Friday or the beginning of next week so we can get somebody on site to start erecting the building. So unfortunately not a whole lot happened in the last few weeks since the building's been delivered. I think it was delivered right before or after the first of the year. The last few weeks have been a bit of a blur. So other than that, not a whole ton of update. Let me see here. Oh, the electrical switchgear. There was a bit of an issue with the how we were planning on powering the building. The original switchgear, the cable was direct buried into concrete, so we couldn't get new wiring. So we're having to change our switchgear strategy. We'll still be able to power the building with the existing switchgear as a temporary solution. And then when the new switchgear gets here, either over spring break or right after school gets out, we'll install the new switchgear, but the building will still be able to operate with the temporary gear that we'll install in the existing gear. And we're working on an entryway structure design. We're hoping to have a proposal to share in the next few days. and working on getting the ramps fixed for the existing modulars. Some of those ramps have, you know, are not in the greatest condition, and one of them, I think, failed recently. So we're getting proposals to get those ramps fixed. And I think that's about most of the stuff for the existing campus. Sherry, do you have anything on your mind for Doyle that I didn't touch on here?
No.
Nick, I've got a couple things. When you say, explain the electrical issue again, it almost sounded to me like you guys didn't stub it in so you could pull wire.
No, this is the original gear that's sitting there to the south of that main building, kind of adjacent to one of the modulars. It's been there for, you know, since the 70s or whatever, when the original building was built. When they put the power in, they buried it directly in concrete. So there's no conduit to pull or anything. So, you know, we can't pull any new wire through any conduit because the conduit doesn't exist. So in order to remediate that, there's a conduit right at the base, but the electrical company came out. We did some excavation. They're like, oh, yeah, this is how we used to do it back in the day. We can't try to jackhammer it out and even find it, because if we jackhammer it, we've got a high likelihood of damaging the cable that we think's in there. So we don't want to do that. So we've just changed the strategy. There's no additional cost or anything. It's not going to delay anything. It just changes when the switch gear is going to be installed.
Okay, and we have the erection contractor has backed out. What does that look like on our end? When the milk goes sour, we don't want to drink it. Bottom line,
exactly.
It's not going to cost us more. And if it's not done on time, who is being fined per day on it not being done on time?
Yeah, there's contractual issues, you know, of course, with the prime contractor, and that's Modern. So that's why when I said it's not an our problem per se, but it is in terms of just the schedule. We just want to get the building done. But yeah, if it all comes down to the contractor on living up to the terms of the contract. So I know that they're scrambling to try to solve this. It's not something that they said they've ever experienced before, having a contractor just back out. You know, they've been doing this for a long time, and so have I, and I've never seen this sort of a situation, but we're also in a weird situation in construction where people are able to pick and choose their jobs in a lot of these situations, because there just isn't enough people out there working right now, unfortunately. There's too much work that's happening.
The contractor that backed out, isn't he under contract?
Yeah, and you know, you can go into litigation, but it's just one of those things you're not gonna save any time. What the owner of the company said is his guys will just quit instead of going there. They don't want to go to Doyle. They'll just go to another metal building company and just go work for somebody else, because they can get a job anywhere they want, and they don't want to go to the middle of nowhere. They'd rather work somewhere locally. So instead of working for him, they'll just go quit and work for somebody else.
So shouldn't that owner of the company that signed this contract to erect our building be held accountable for not having his guys here? He's under contract.
Yeah, we certainly can. I mean, at the end of the day, if his crew does bail and then, you know, it's just him, you know, there's maybe some punitive damages we can go after. But my thought is that the legal action is probably going to be a lot more time consuming and costly than trying to find another contractor, which I think we're going to have in the next few days.
Well, that's fine and dandy, but the person that signed up to do this work should be held accountable for backing out of this contract. In that contract, is there any kind of fines that we can hit these people with for backing out, or what is that contract?
The contract isn't with us.
But
yeah, it's
contracted it out.
Yeah, I'd have to go see what we have in the contract. I can't recall off the top of my head. You know, this isn't a situation I've ever experienced before. I don't know. We've got contractual means to get stuff out of Modern, but we don't have means to get anything out of their subcontractor. So if Modern's still living up to the contract, then that's all we have to go off of.
Well,
and it's their means and methods on how they accomplish it.
Well, what happens with Modern when they don't deliver this building on time? Is there something in our contract, a certain amount per day, if it's not done on time?
Yeah, there are liquidated damages. I don't have the contract in front of me. Couldn't tell you what the date is that it is. And we've had some extensions due to change orders. But there are liquidated damages that are, I think, $200 a day or something. I can't remember exactly the dollar amount.
Wow, they're getting away with murder. Do you think by next update, next month, you could get us up to speed on exactly what that contract looked like, just in case they don't have all those
details? Yeah, certainly.
Whose idea was it to only find $200 a day in the contract?
The problem with liquidated damages is that when you go to actually get liquidated damages, you have to prove what the actual damages are. So let's say you're a bottling plant that wants to bottle beer or something. You can't make sales because it's X amount of dollars. So there's a dollar amount associated with that. For our project, you'd have to find a way to say, okay, it's this amount of dollar, even though you've got it predetermined in the contract. If it actually goes to litigation, it doesn't actually fly. You've got to prove the actual damages, which for us would probably be interest charges, because we don't have something that's generating revenue or cost. So, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but that's my understanding of the law. We'd have to get, representation to figure out what that actually looks like. But that's my understanding of how we'd have to do this. We can say, you know, it's this dollar amount, and that's kind of how we came up with it, is based on the interest cost. But ultimately, a lawyer is going to be the one that would know all of the details.
So our interest cost is like 80 something dollars a day. We already looked into what our cost is here.
Right.
I mean, I just want to share that with you, that we did look at that to ask our lender what the daily cost was at this point.
I'm just used to being the subcontractor as a carpenter down in the area. And we're talking, there are big projects that could run 10 grand a day. But then you're supposed to be done at a certain time through contracts. All right.
Yeah, the law changed a few years ago where you could have say $1 million a day if you wanted to, even if you didn't have any real true damages. And a few years ago, the law was changed to where you can't just arbitrarily come up with a number. That dollar amount has to actually be based on what the damages are to the client by not delivering this project in that certain amount of time. It can't just be a punitive way to try to make money.
Any other questions for Nick?
You going to talk about Susanville now?
Oh, yeah, Susanville. So we've got the spire removed from the building, installing a temporary cap that will keep it weatherproof. Trying to get the bathrooms finalized. We're waiting on some material to come in to finish the bathrooms. We're scheduling the kitchen to work around the district schedule so that it's not going to impact access to the kitchen and staff needs. The drinking fountain was delivered today. We're waiting on the door so that we can get the door painted, flooring for the bathroom and the kitchen. We're trying to identify exactly, we had an original count on the number of door handles, but it looks like a few might have been missed and we want to add some. So we need to, we were working on adjusting the door handle count and the types of handles that we're going to use. Some are pass through, some are lockable. So just clarifying exactly what that's going to look like. I think that's about it for Thompson Peak as well. We've got a schedule. Sherry, I don't know if you've shared the schedule with anybody else, but we developed a schedule earlier this week on what the plan is looking like for completing work.
Our next meeting, we'll have a nice drinking fountain here instead of plastic over the eyesore that it is right now, that it's been for a few months. Oh, okay. It has been done.
That door they had to widen for the ADA compliance, so that drinking fountain is no longer.
Okay. And so the plastic's down and everything now?
It's a wall.
Okay. A wall. Never mind. It was not pretty here.
The new drinking fountain will be in the hallway.
Okay.
So my question is, did the drinking fountain that got delivered, is it the one we expected?
I didn't open
the door. I haven't seen like a picture of it yet, but I know the original one, or I was told the original one, the order was canceled and they reordered it with the proper one with the bottle filler. So that's what I'm assuming was delivered. So I'll confirm with a picture from Scott when he gets out there tomorrow.
Stephanie, what were you saying?
I can open it when we're done here. It's right outside the door. You know, I'm curious.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Mid-year iReady scores.
Hi, that's me. Back in December, or no, Jen, or whenever we last met, I did share iReady, but it was kind of, it wasn't the completed picture. And so in the intervention, my intervention report are the actual numbers, but I can share my screen and show that to you right now. So looking at, we have, is that show, am I showing the right stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. So this is Long Valley. We're going to start with Long Valley, fall to winter reading. Test window one was our fall scores, and test window two is our mid-year. And what's most important is that we see a shrinking of that red, the two grade levels below and three grade levels, and the growth in primarily the kind of stripy green and green, and then the yellow. So for Long Valley, they've made gains in reading with 24% of students in that mid to early on grade level, and 36% being one grade level below. For math, we're still, you can see that the yellow is a lot, it has grown, but yet we have a lot of shrinking happening in those, in that red area, with 11% of our students in the mid to early on grade level, mid and above, and then 45% with just one grade level below. So that's also Long Valley. Moving over to Thompson Peak for their reading, you see that again, they are making great gains in the with 33% in that green area and 23% in the yellow. And we got our shrinking in that red. And math. So we've got 19% of students performing at the on or above grade level, and 24% being one grade level below, and a much smaller area in red. So we are making those gains. The interventions programs that are going on at all the sites are showing that students are gaining, closing those gaps. So that's all I have, because I really went over it last in our last meeting. So I just wanted to show the final picture. Any questions?
What's the typical regression from the end of the school year to the beginning of the next school year?
Can you repeat one more time the beginning of your?
The typical regression from the end of the school year to the beginning of the next school year. Would you say 6% or less?
I think it just, yeah, there is definite, you know, you do see it. I don't know for sure, but like, I'd have to go back through our data to really say yes, 6%. But we do see kids will fall back for from spring to the beginning of the school year. But one thing, you know, just looking at our CASP scores, it wasn't surprising where we kind of landed in fall. And so just really trying to really look at what are the areas that we really need to isolate and focus on?
So do you think, in your opinion, that we're outpacing the, so you have a regression, that means you also have a bounce back from fall to winter. Are we outpacing that typical acceleration? I hope that question makes sense. Because you're gonna go forwards too, right?
I know, yeah. And I do know that, like, I mean, I think with the targeted instruction that is happening, especially, you know, with the four times a week in math at Doyle, and then what Thompson Peak has going on with their, with their younger students coming on for reading lessons. And then they have math, but also writing. I think just having students coming on site and those directed lessons are really showing the gains that are needed.
Okay. And then my other question would be, and I don't know if this is appropriate, but is there anything that you need more that you're not getting to improve?
I think that's appropriate.
I try to stay out of the day-to-day
stuff. I know you do, but you're interested.
Yeah, it's very important.
Well, I definitely think that, we're having Doug Fisher come back in February 2nd. And I think with having conversations around our looking at engagement and making sure that our students are actively engaged and looking at their learning as something that they want to really move forward. Stephanie shared with me that really changing that culture around the iReady testing and getting kids excited about it, I think really alluded to the bigger gains that they saw. So I think just having those conversations, I think having it always being at the forefront for the board is really great that we are able to have these conversations and talk about what are the needs of our students and the community when it comes to closing these gaps. And so I think just making sure and just really getting data practices and not being afraid of really looking at where do we need to focus more, but along with that, I think celebrating the amazing growth that is happening.
Absolutely. So you're happy with what you have at the moment, is what you're saying?
Yes. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Okay. Item 8C, risk control evaluation report.
So our CharterSafe, our insurance company, once a year sends like a survey out to answer. And then every 3 years they do a site visit to really look to see where we can improve. So this one is just the survey one. And we did score, as you've seen, low in two areas. And one is the not having 24-hour surveillance. And the other one is not having a dedicated site committee. So those were the two areas that we scored low at. It's to go around.
We
didn't get the grant we put in for it, but you approved all the orders for this kind of surveillance that will no longer score us low. Right.
And so do they take into effect, because there's one part about it talking about how our security system doesn't notify the guards or law enforcement. Did they take into effect where we're located?
Not for this
talking about fire and
no. So this particular one is like a blanket one they use across the board. So that's why you have your site visit where they actually come here and they go and look at everything.
So that could change some of this,
but yeah,
they come and look at it.
Okay.
Are we coming up on that?
Yes.
Yeah, they've changed it quite a bit. They don't approve anything less anymore.
Well, and they haven't done it because of the COVID and all that.
They came out and I was used to every spot check. See that?
Really,
it was nice.
So for CharterSafe, they're the ones that I've ever been involved in, they're very thorough. But sometimes so thorough, it's like, okay, this will be over.
Yeah. 4 hours they're in.
Serious, but they are. They have the detail.
The details we get
very
hard.
And because we have made some improvements since the last time we did a site inspection.
And all three sites took care of the sort of high priority items, and you know, sort of that next level. So we definitely. But the surveillance piece is just huge now. And all three sites, like what a breath of fresh air. Everybody had some equipment that they were piloting, and what they're able to see and access has been really great. No more vandalism at Thompson Peak.
Knock on wood.
I think that the critters that were guilty are aware that we have better system to monitor that now.
Did you put up a poster like that?
Well, they're in every single window. But they can see the equipment that we had before and the stuff we have now. And I'm sure there's word on the street. Based on the vandalism, I don't think they were high time criminals.
Item D, Wask.
Excellent. So I sent you guys two of the pieces out of 10 for Rough Draft to take a look at. If you have any comments on it, it was really the first part is just what is the school, the background, history, and things like that. And then the second part is really, I think, of great interest. It sets the tone of what changes have we had and then the progress that we've had from our initial self-study 6 years ago. So if you read any parts of that, I would encourage you to read that portion because we have made a lot of strides. And with some of our goals was, you know, increasing academics and CAS and math and English. And so we've met some of those things like the IOPs, the RTI handbook, increasing our college and careers. And so we've, you know, added classes with that. And I've been working with a contract or an independent contractor to help us with creating more of those classes. So I'd really, it's a point of pride for the schools that we have made progress on the goals that they've set for us. The next two parts will be, one is looking specifically at the data, noticing any trends and identifying them. And then the next part will be all about the governance and how awesome it is and how effective we are and things like that. So I just have a couple more pieces. Kathy's been helping me with it as well, so I appreciate that. And then I'll be sending that in a couple days. And then the next part will be the actual like teaching, curriculum instructions, parent involvement, kind of looking at what we do and how effective that is. And then the part after that is we identify the areas of growth. And then the last part of that is we make a plan with really metrics to show, like, hey, are we doing these things? How do we know that we're doing them?
And so you're doing every section.
So I'm really creating the rough draft to give it to the teachers and everybody to kind of put their input and stuff like that, because it just takes a lot of work. And sometimes it's easier to kind of come with ideas first and be like, hey, do you agree? Do you not agree? As an opposed to
you do every section.
Yeah, just a rough draft of, it's a labor of love, you know, but it's good, it's, you know, just a reflective piece, and so it's just nice to write about, you know, what we set out to do, and that we actually have been doing it, because you get so lost in the day-to-day, I'm like, oh, are we doing anything that we talked about, and it's like, yes, we are doing it, so that's really great, so yes, more coming, so.
And like I said last time, you know, Kelly has served on a lot of committees now. In fact, I was kind of very proud that she got invited to like a last minute one. Somebody had canceled and the chairperson for that committee called on Kelly from prior experience to say, come be on our committee, you know, for other schools. So she is getting the lingo down and digging in. So,
yeah.
So we have comments. Can we just send them back to her?
That's true.
Bring
that
for her. I haven't looked at any of
good, bad, you know, really bad.
Yeah, ask questions. And then Kelly, part of your process is to go to each site
yeah, share it and have a conversation.
Yeah, say if they agree with the strengths and areas of needs and things, you know, because it really doesn't matter what I think the school needs, really a collective effort, you know. I do my best to say, like, hey, this is what I think we need, you know, and they're like, yeah, we see that too, you know, but it's, yeah, we're all going to be living it and doing it and practicing it and watching it, so.
Oh man, Kelly, I was watching you, listening to you talk and watching you on the screen, and there was such a delay. We have a serious delay, so that explains all the breaking up that they're getting.
Sorry.
It's the Doyle internet, apparently, that's a little off. It's not your fault, it's just I happen to be watching. It's like, oh yeah, we're off.
And this WASC certification are April 8th through the 10th?
Correct, and they'll be virtual. So it's due February 28th. So it'll be, the final one will be at the February 4th meeting to approve, like the areas of growth and the plan that we have for it and stuff like that. But you'll see like the kind of where it's heading way before then. Yeah.
So please, you know, again, you will be asked by the WASC committee most likely, have you seen that? Did you contribute? You know, yeah. Were you involved in any way in that report? And it's important that people can say honestly, yeah, yes, we did.
Oh, so we're not supposed to say, what are you talking about?
I mean, some people probably be like, yeah, you know.
I apologize. I haven't looked through it either. I'll be like, yeah, but I will.
You have time. You have lots of time.
All right, action items. Item 9A, discussion of possible action regarding approval of the school accountability report card. Do we have a motion?
I motion.
A second. Sorry. I can't hear them.
Yes, the school accountability.
Really is a document that has this kind of like a report card kind of like kids get, like how we're doing on certain things, a lot of data pieces, you know, testing data. It's really a lot of pieces that the LCAP has, but instead of goals, really, it's kind of just like a snapshot of the school and where we're at and, you know, demographics and
right, teachers, what is the teachers credentialing?
Yeah,
looking at our, you know, we, it actually reports the scores. There's actually very little we add to that report. That document tracking service that we use for a lot of our reports pulls in all the data because it's a lot of data. Here's this on this site, here's this from that site, and they put it together. We add a few extra pieces, but
Who sees these report cards? It's basically all school committee.
State?
The state actually looks at them. So we have to put it on our website after it's been approved. And then we also have to upload it to the state's location where they collect them.
Okay. And we can check our grade for our report card for Doyle compared to a public school.
It doesn't work that way.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. Okay.
No. It's just sharing all that data that you've already seen, but it's put together so that there is an across the board, every school has to produce this school accountability report card with the same data on it.
And there's nowhere to compare our school compared to other schools.
You can just start opening theirs and compare any line you want.
Yeah, they're on each website, each school website.
Right, each school website.
Yeah.
Not a website that hosts all of them.
There is a website that hosts all of them.
Oh.
The state has a website where they put them all.
But you still have them.
But you have to know, pull, right?
You gotta know where you're going to navigate back.
Right.
Okay. I was just curious how we look compared to other places.
But you can, you know, go to, you're required to have it on your website. So any school around here, if you want to go to their website by February 1, they have to have them posted on the website.
It was very interesting to read today.
Okay. Thank you for doing that.
All right, we have a first and a second. Roll call. Sean, aye. Wilma?
Aye.
Stacy?
Aye.
Aye. I'm not sure if they're...
Item B, discussion and possible action regarding approval of Troops to Schools program incentives. Do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second. Do we have a discussion?
Yes.
Go for it.
All right.
Flattened all my cars.
I'm sorry, Sean. Well, there's Troops to Schools. There's all kinds of options if we decide to get in on this. As far as I know, we're the last school to join in, and Mr. Nugent's going to D.C. next month, and he wants to have in his pocket that every school in Lassen County is participating in this. There's all kinds of options, whether it's a step increase, $1,000 stipend when you're hired. What is it that we are looking at exactly if we're going to get on board?
So I can tell you that the recommendation I wrote up was to do a step increase.
Okay.
So when they're in it, I included what Morgan had provided, Mr. Nugent, that it's a step increase when you're hired, but if you're already hired, you would get a one-time bump up. So you don't get anything on a year-to-year, but you start one step higher.
And the fiscal impact is next in a...
Well, it's probably about 3% for the few individuals that this is going to affect.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
Overall, it's... we're talking nothing.
Minimal.
In the grand scheme of things.
Not if you ask the business manager.
Whoa.
How many veterans do we have?
Do you know? I think, is it two? Three.
Plus any that you have attracted this. May or may not be.
But I think working with the rest of the county, saying that we value
absolutely
veterans is a bigger impact.
That, and we wouldn't want to be the only school in the entire county not on board, basically. Okay.
Anything else? Roll call, Sean. Aye. Wilma?
Aye.
Stacy?
Aye.
Aye.
Can't hear you guys.
Discussion and possible action regarding approval of MOU with Placer County Office of Ed for the CLEAR Administrative Services credential. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All right. Any discussion on that one? Roll call. Sean, aye. Wilma?
Aye.
Stacy?
Aye.
Jason? Aye. Randy?
Aye.
Item D, discussion and possible action regarding approval of LCAP.
We're
done. Future items, safety plan update, art, music, instructional materials, block grant plan, policy on sports, extracurricular, and co-curricular activities. Are there any other items to be considered for the next meeting? Meeting is adjourned at 6:28. That's your evening.
I went there out of the car fire too. Well, is the volume on?